Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty present the Underdog Podcast.
And welcome back to another edition of the Underdog Dynasty Podcast, AAC edition. My name's Dan Morrison. That is Emily Van Buskirk. How are you doing today?
Doing great. How are you?
I am doing tired. I just messed up the introduction. It's going to have to be edited to make it sound like I didn't. It's fine. Luckily for me, we only have three games this week.
Yes. Yeah. It's a light week.
It is. You know, so we'll get to those in a minute. We also are going to have a little bit later, we're doing like a mid-season awards kind of thing on the show today, just to kind of like see where everything's at. So pretty excited about that, I'd say.
Yeah,
I am.
I think it'll be fun to look back on how far we've come and who's done notable things. It's always good.
It definitely will be. I did want to update the records because, as I mentioned on the last show, I completely forgot to add them up and didn't have in front of me.
Which I'm fine with, but you know.
Yeah, so last week I was 4-1, and that puts me at 44-15 on the year. You were 2-3, correct? I want to make sure.
I got yes.
That. Yep. Okay. That puts you at 31-28 for the year, which is decidedly a winning record.
It is. It is.
Not a lot of
getting close though.
Not a lot of games to catch up this week. You are going to want to avoid that clean sweep though, because you know you'll be staring at a 500 record if you do.
I think I'll be okay because Tulane's not playing this week, so I don't have.
So you
to
can't pick them. No one makes you pick them. I picked them the first few weeks. Look what I did. I stopped.
I make me pick them. It's like a pride thing at this point.
Eventually, the olive green will win.
They will. I didn't look at the rest of the schedule, so I probably shouldn't say that.
They're into AAC play now, so they're only gonna have conference games. So like, do you think they're better than Tulsa and SMU and teams like that? We'll see.
It really depends. It depends on which Tulsa team shows up.
Well, no, but Tulane's not a 1-11 team, so I'm not concerned about them never winning again. They're not.
Okay.
Okay, we've got a game Thursday. Let's start there.
Let's do that.
Thursday at 7:30, Navy is at Memphis. This is a much closer game annually than I think people realize. Mm. And Navy doesn't typically win at the Liberty Bowl, but they almost always keep it close. Last year was like a 10-7 game, and that really shouldn't have been close like that. Memphis was the much better team on paper, at least, you know. And now we look at Memphis is coming to this game kind of in a little bit of a downward spiral, and Navy's building on something all of a sudden. What do you think that we need to look out for in this game?
Gosh, it's so crazy to me because, like you said, if we looked at this before, you know, at the beginning of the season, it's like a non-thing, you know. And this is the game that Mike McIntyre was like, you should come out to this game, because when we were talking about it, I think in his mind, it was like, this was going to be a fun game to watch.
Game a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. And so he was like, yeah, come out and see what we can do. But now as we head into it, you know, Memphis, where they are losing to Tulsa that way, and Navy giving SMU a game
after they beat UCF.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I really don't know who I'm going to pick in this one. This is going to be like a game time decision. Yeah.
We're coming up on that. You've only got a couple minutes.
I'm going to let you go first. So. Well,
you're just going to pick against me. That's mean. No, I think that the real key to this game is if Memphis can control the Navy triple option. Obviously, that's not great insight. Everyone knows that by me. Memphis really, really struggled last week against the run at Tulsa. They just could not slow it down. They had a couple runs, Tulsa did, that absolutely was embarrassing for the Memphis defense. Their tackling was it was really bad and they were losing at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
Navy is a team that is first off going to cut block you, which is a pain to deal with. It's not something you're used to have happening. It's really, it's tough on your knees, frankly. It's tough on defensive linemen who aren't, you know, it's a completely different skill set to get past a cut block than it is a regular block. It's just, it's a lot.
Yeah.
You have to be very assignment sound and can't be undisciplined at all. You know, that's, you know, I'm not calling Memphis undisciplined, but it's not like their defense is elite at that type of thing either. You know, it's something that they've been trying to work on though. And then the triple option, it does force you to make decisions in space as a defender. And I don't know that Memphis's defensive guys are decisive enough at this point to do that. And on top of that, tackling fullbacks and like a 6'1" quarterback who wants to run through you all day is not particularly fun. So it's I think it's going to be a really tough assignment for the Memphis defense.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, again, a month ago, I wouldn't have said that. I would have said, you know, it might be tricky for them, but like now I'm a lot more confident in what Navy's been doing the past couple of weeks, you know?
Yeah.
On the flip side of it, Memphis has the speed and athletes on their offense that Navy shouldn't be able to slow them down, you know, and the, you know, the strength of Navy's defense is their, what I consider to be a very creative blitz package and a very deceptive blitz package from Brian Newberry, their defensive coordinator. But the fact is they are smaller and they are, you know, slower than Memphis is going to be. So Memphis should score and score quickly. The trick is, well, are you going to score so quickly that your defense is exhausted? That was kind of an issue against UTSA's running game, which again, also ran through that Memphis defense.
Yeah.
You know, so I think Memphis is in danger of their defense playing 45 minutes in this game, which I'm not a big time of possession guy, but that's a lot. That's different.
Yeah.
I think they're in danger of, you know, just getting worn out and not getting enough stops against Navy.
I think the fourth quarter of this game, if you're going to tune in at all, that's where you should tune in, because I think throughout the first three, it's going to be sketchy, you know what I mean? And we're not really going to know how it's going to pan out. But that fourth quarter for Navy is pivotal, because they could not finish last week and they did not score in that fourth quarter. So if Memphis can just hang on and ride it out for those first three and then, you know, finish like they have done in previous games this year at home. I think
at home's huge for Memphis.
Exactly. I think they're going to pan out. It's just, I think it's going to be a nail biter at some point where you're looking at it and like, oh my God, they might lose, but I don't think they're actually going to lose. So
The other thing that you have to be remember with the fourth quarter, at least is for Navy against SMU, they weren't able to wear down the SMU defense the way they did UCF's the week before. UCF's defense was exhausted and had basically no chance of stopping them come the fourth quarter, and their offense couldn't stay on the field. So it's going to be about how long Memphis can stay on the field. Also, Memphis needs to clean up their turnovers. Don't give Navy extra possessions in this game, you know?
Yes.
You know, and with that being said, I think I'm taking Navy.
Really?
Yeah. I think I got Navy in this one. I don't trust Memphis's run defense at all.
Wow. That's crazy. Okay. Well, I was going to go Memphis, but I am still going to go. I'm going to go Memphis. Right. I think they're going to do it. I think their secondary.
I see it's a very similar game to what Navy played last week against SMU, stylistically, at least. It's a very, you know, it's a spread offense that they're going to up against. It's trying to put up a ton of points. I know what SMU does and what Memphis does, completely different offenses, but like, the mentality is at least a little bit similar, that they're going to be explosive on offense and the defense will try to get theirs. And I think that Memphis is just a lesser version of that type of thing this year, you know, not necessarily through any fault of their own. They're a very young team. It's a, you know, freshman quarterback, freshman running back, you know, a lot of young guys on the defense, but I just think that Navy is coming on so hard right now. And I think Memphis also, I do think that momentum of like spiraling is there at this point. They're, I think, probably going to be panicking a little.
Hennigan does lead in passing yards in the conference, 323 per game.
Yeah, he's having a great year.
But, so I think they're going to be okay offensively. And you're right, defensively is going to be where Memphis has to step up. But I feel like it's going to come down to that fourth quarter and they're going to win, or something crazy is going to happen like the Mississippi State game. And
So you're predicting it kind of looks a little bit like the SMU-Navy game last week, where it's close and then one team with the
better. I think Navy is one of those teams where they tend to repeat themselves in games and you just see the same thing all the time because that's what they are.
Well, there's, there are variations and subtleties to it that can trick you if you're not careful, but they do. Right. Yeah. But it's the triple option and it's a lot of counteraction and you do know what to expect. It's just whether or not you can stop it.
Right. So, I mean, you have to imagine that's what, you know, Memphis is planning for this whole week. So yeah, I don't know if they could stop it, but they're at home. I give them a little bit of an advantage. So they need it.
They do need a win bad. Only two games after that, both of them on Saturday, both of them at noon. The first one we'll talk about is Tulsa at USF. Tulsa coming off a win, USF coming off a bye. What do you think of this right off the bat?
It's another game where you're like, I thought I knew what we were going to see. And now we don't, because Tulsa, I don't trust them. You know what I mean? I think obviously not for a second. Yeah. And USF is like the little engine that could, I told you that, like, I love their team and I love Jeff Scott and I love their quarterback. So in this one, I'm kind of like rooting for them a little bit. But I don't know. I really don't know. This is another one. I don't know what to pick. Like, I think my head is like, you should pick Tulsa. Right. Mm-hmm. But like USF's at home. They are trying to build on the momentum and show that they can fight. They need the win. It's tough. Mm-hmm. The Bulls offense, they're not bad statistically.
Yeah, I don't really trust either team to pick them. I think it's going to be a very interesting game to watch just to get an idea of where both teams are at. Like, you know, going into last week, I was very, very down on Tulsa. I was sick of them. Their only win was against a bad Arkansas State team. And I was just sick of pretending that they're anything like they were last year. You know, then they went and beat Memphis, who I also have kind of this mixed feelings about where they at as a program right now, where they at as a team. I don't know what Tulsa is 100% right now. You know, like, I do my power rankings every week. I had no idea where to put Tulsa this past week. I'll be honest.
I know. Like, I don't know what to do with them.
And, you know, USF, I know what they are. At the very least, I know that they are, well, one of the bottom two or so teams in the conference, and they're trying to build something. You know, I don't say that as like an insult to South Florida, but like,
it's just what it is.
Realistically, like, you're trying to build something. You need to like get a foundation going to do that. Trust me. I went to the UMass UConn game this past weekend. UMass has won two games since 2019. Like, it can take time to build something. And you know what I mean? Like, it's okay. It's not an insult to like say that. It might take time. In fact, it's actually better to let it take time and trust the process kind of deal. Yeah. Not that we trust the process the way the 76ers do. That's weird. But you know what I mean? Like, trust that building process rather than doing like what a Florida State's doing right now, which is, you know, every like year and a half that isn't perfect, you panic and try and like reset and gets worse. You know, so you do have to take that time to really build it up. I want to see USF in this game because they are at home. They're coming off a bye. I want to see them come out and let Timmy McClain kind of go and either win it or lose it for them. Let him open up the offense, open up the playbook for him and say, go do it. Tulsa's secondary is not all that strong. Tulsa's defensive line is very good and they will make it difficult at best for USF to run the ball on them. I don't expect to see USF gain a lot on the ground. So it is, I think they want to score an offense. They need to let McClain kind of grip it and rip it and see what happens. And, you know, don't make it a check down game. Don't make it a kind of very in control game manager thing. Like, say, let's go see everything that you have and go win it or lose it for us. Doesn't matter which, because, you know, you're not going to a bowl game anyways. You're just,
here to learn. You're here to grow.
Exactly. You know? It is a game where you can either say, oh, this is what you can do. Let's go keep doing that. Or like, here's what you need to work on and we can develop from there. That's what we want to see out of USF. And again, that's not saying I don't need them to win the game. I just need them to play confident.
To do better than they did last week. Yeah, exactly.
I do think Tulsa on both lines is a lot better than USF, but I don't trust Davis Brin as a quarterback just yet. I don't trust their secondary, and I don't frankly trust Philip Montgomery as the head coach. You know,
interesting.
No, I just don't. Especially his offensive scheme. It's not consistent the way it should be with his particular background. You know?
Yeah. I'm not a huge, I didn't get the background of Tulsa last year like you had. So I just haven't been a believer since I saw their first game against Davis. But
you have to remember, I got last year. I also got like the 3 years before that where you won like 7 or 8 games the whole time.
Right.
You know?
Right. Last year was kind of a weird anomaly, but still, I mean, they got some people to buy in. So yeah, there was something there. But I think with USF, this is my thing, is you look at their record and you look at their losses and you say, okay, this team is struggling, but they played really good opponents. I mean, ranked teams, mm-hmm. you know, and yes, they lost the way you're supposed to lose to a ranked team, but it's a skewed sample size because you cannot tell how really good they are until they play a team like Tulsa and Temple. These two back-to-back games are going to be very measuring stick, you know, like indicators of how he's doing there. So I'm actually excited for this because we're going to get to see the real Bulls and what they can do against a fair opponent, you know, and that might sound bad, but that's what it is.
No, that's absolutely fair. It's the same way when, when we get any matchup like this, where you say like, mm-hmm. now we get to learn a little something about the two teams. We're learning something right. in this game. Because the truth is yeah. we might be halfway through the year right now, but neither one of these teams has looked all that particularly good. You know,
right.
Tulsa's been a little bit more confusing. USF, you kind of know what's going on there. Tulsa makes right. a little less sense, you know, at least at a glance. You know, if you dive deeper, you know that they lost a lot off of last year's team, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
You don't need to rehash that too much. Everyone knows
of
it.
Course.
But like, you know, they're two teams in a similar position, and they're also two teams who need to show which direction second half of the year is going to go for them. Is it going to be like, do you crater out or do you have something to build on, I guess is the best way to put it.
Right.
Who are you picking?
I am going to ride with USF because I think this is going to be the week we get to see who, what they're really made of and who they are. So, and they're home. I'm very much an advocate for the home field advantage. Yeah. So, and Tulsa yeah. just doesn't do it for me. Mm-hmm. So.
I think I agree with you.
Ah, oh my God.
At home after a bye week, Tulsa yeah. obviously looked really good last week. They were very good in the trenches. If they win this game, it's because they are stronger. Their running game and their ability to like make USF one dimensional will do it. I just,
yeah.
I don't know. Gets us picked the Bulls.
Let's do it. We're yeah, rolling.
We're all in. Jeez, that feels awful.
It feels weird, but I'm here for it. well, at least this game's going to be interesting for you, this last one, because you know what you should do, but I don't know if you're going to do it.
I know what I'm doing. It's fine.
Okay.
UCF at Cincinnati.
Number 3 Cincinnati.
This was one of those
to you,
games.
Dan.
Yeah, until the playoff poll starts coming out and they come in at number 7 and then they've got a bye week and they're number 9 afterwards for some reason. Because
right now they're the number 3 team. Yeah. They're the number 3 team in the nation right now. So we are celebrating that.
That's time to change.
We are celebrating it with Cincinnati fans. We're happy for you.
It's awesome that they're ranked that highly. It's great for the conference as a whole. Again, like I mentioned,
enjoy it for now, right?
Exactly. I mentioned like, it's great for the conference. Houston's good again. It just sucks they're mm-hmm. leaving. Same thing with this with Cincinnati. It's great yeah. how good they are. It's a shame they're leaving, at least from the yeah. conference's perspective. But, you know, this game itself, I think, is going to be a really good one, a really fun one.
Really?
I think it's going to be fun. First off, the atmosphere at Nippert is going to be absolutely incredible. And I think that's... You know, UCF's starting once again, Mikey Keene, the true freshman, like 18-year-old. That's not going to go. It's going to be a big atmosphere for him. You know, like Navy was his first start. That was a road game. And that's a very unique, special atmosphere. This is going to be a much more intense one. That's going to play a factor, at least for how UCF's offense operates. The offense needs to rely heavily on its running backs who are, unfortunately, I think still missing Isaiah Bowser, the big bruiser in the backfield. So they're going to be a little bit more small ball running backs, more speed on the outside kind of deal. And that's fine. Those guys are good. You just would like to have the complement of the big inside back. And then you need to make sure all his passes are kind of quick, get it out of his hands. You know, I mentioned just before about let Timmy McLean open it up. Do not let Mikey Keene open it up. He's not, don't put him in that situation against Cincinnati. You know, keep it to screens, keep it to slants, keep it to one or two quick reads. Don't make him go through progressions. the offensive line, help him out. Help him out and give him time to do that quick, you know, progression stuff.
Yeah.
Do that. I think UCF can score some points, not more, not a lot of points, but some points. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On the other side of the ball.
What do you do about Jerome Ford, sir?
Oh, there's a lot of injuries and that's going to be an issue. I think you, I think you rely on Tatum Bethune. I think you need a huge day from him.
Yeah.
You need your, you know, you need your best linebackers to step up, especially with injuries to guys like Kalia Davis. You need to see Big Cat Bryant in the backfield, Anthony Montalvo in the backfield. You need to see, Salascar. You need to see those guys pressuring Ritter all day long and forcing him to throw it a little bit before he's ready. UCF defense line, even with a couple of injuries at D tackle, is still very capable of, you know, against a not great Cincinnati offensive line, if we're being honest. Is very capable of pressuring Ritter and forcing him to make throws before he wants to. You know, again, like you mentioned, Ford, he's going to be difficult for them to stop because he's going to go up the middle at backup defensive tackles. That's just reality. My concern, especially for the UCF defense, is that secondary is still very young and still learning a lot of things. And they looked pretty good against ECU, but this is a little bit of a different beast. I'm in particular, Alec Pierce, the wide receiver who's their big play threat. I think he's probably going to get it. I think he's probably going to get his against the UCF defense. That'll probably be in throughout the course of the game. I think the special teams are also interesting in this game because Cincinnati's kicker has been abysmal and Gus Malzahn does not trust Daniel Obarski, the UCF kicker. He just doesn't the way he's used him.
It's crazy.
It's just,
I mean, I don't know how good he is, I guess, but
last year was really, he was terrible, if we're being honest.
He never made a kick terrible? Or
he cost them several games terrible.
So Malzahn's going off of that, but he wasn't the coach then. I feel like
he's been the coach all offseason if he's still missing in practice.
And why even have a kicker at that point?
They didn't kick until the Navy game. That's when I say
there's not somebody on campus who can't walk on the team and get a soccer player. Jesus, how hard is it? So if I could kick field goals, I have done it. You know what I mean? Get a female.
I guarantee you I'm incapable of kicking a field goal. If you told me make this 25 yard kick.
It's really not as hard as you think.
I've never been able to get the ball elevated. It's not the distance or power. It's the actually understanding how to elevate the ball. There's a technique issue that I just don't understand about it is all that I think.
Well, people who played soccer like myself, I played in college and they're I have a girlfriend who is the kicker for her college team. Mm-hmm. Now it's Division III, but still, you could find kickers. That's my point, Gus Malzahn. Okay. If you really wanted one, you could find it.
Well, he's been used very, very sparingly this year, and I don't think that I think there's a lack of trust, and that lack of trust does extend to UCF fans who don't trust Obarski as the kicker.
Well, then go find a new one. That's my...
That's what people have been asking for.
Okay, well, then he needs to listen.
I would say that Josh Heupel, going back, and this is a whole other bag of worms, didn't care about anything but the offense. The defensive players often felt like he was not paying attention to them, and he was kind of like, oh, just go with Randy Shannon, and he'll be your head coach. I'm the head coach of the offense. And he definitely was not great at special teams. He was not very disciplined. The team lost a lot of discipline under him. We just saw Tennessee came out in the second half against South Carolina and looked like they were sleepwalking all second half after a big first half lead. That's Josh Heupel 101 at UCF. Any UCF fan can tell you that's every single game. They'd go into the halftime locker room 28-10 with a lead, and the game would end up being 35-31 with, it was just this terrible sleepwalking second half sometimes. So there's a lot of those hangovers from the Heupel era that I still think are ingrained into you don't just come in and shake it out like it's a beach towel. No, this needs a full wash sometimes to get the culture. No,
but the great thing about hangovers is that they wear off eventually. Just they takes do. Time.
They do, but it's still year one and there's I think that if UCF was not so devastated with injuries, I'd be inclined to pick the upset partially because I'm a little bit biased, but also because Dylan Gabriel is incredible at, going up against
and putting up big games like that. But for sure.
You're missing your top two running backs. You're missing your, all conference quarterback, who's probably, if not him, Mordecai was going to be the offensive player of the year. You know what I mean? You're missing right now. believe Jalen Robinson's still out your top wide receiver. You know, you're missing, like I mentioned, two defensive tackles. A couple offensive linemen have had issues. You've had issues at linebacker in terms of depth and injuries. Like, it, the list goes on and on. And that's going to, I think, keep them from having a realistic shot at the upset. I do think they're still talented enough, especially in the trenches, to keep it closer than, I saw the spread was like 19 points.
I was just going to say right now to you, do you feel the disrespect? It's not 19, it's 20 and a half.
So
do you feel that disrespect?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's not. This is not a three touchdown game. It just isn't. UCF's two losses.
But it could be. Desmond Ridder is like.
But okay, let me go through it again. Let's say all the injuries are still there. But, you know, instead of throwing a pick six at the end of Louisville, I forget which receiver it was, instead of batting into the air when they dropped it, it fell down at their feet and UCF wins that game. Okay, now they're only one loss, and it was to Navy, and it was, you know, Navy had to come from behind. It was because the quarterback was injured. You can write all these things off. It's probably much more like a 10-point spread. You know, Cincinnati has been starting games incredibly slowly all season long, especially on offense. The defense, I'm not too concerned about there, but their offense, you know, against Murray State, 7 points in the first half. Against Notre Dame, if it wasn't for Notre Dame giving them the ball inside the 15-yard line twice, they're like 7 points in the first half. You know, against Temple, 17 points in the first half. It was really a, you know, punch in the mouth to start the second half that got them the blowout. You know, their offense is not exactly lighting the world on fire. And I think the UCF defense can definitely keep them down and make it look a little bit like the UCF ECU game last week, where you go, man, this is kind of a little bit of a slog, a little bit of a, you know, slugfest for at least some time. No, I don't think UCF's going to win this game. Cincinnati is the better team. You know, they do have more depth. They don't have the injury issues. They're very well coached. Desmond Ridder is a great quarterback. I'm picking Cincinnati to win. I'm not crazy. I'm just saying three touchdowns is way too big of a spread. It's going to be a closer game than that.
I think it's going to be a blowout, but I wasn't a big believer until I saw them play in person in that Notre Dame game. And then watching them at Nipper, it really is a crazy environment. Like, it looks deadly.
That's a very, very difficult environment for Mike Eakin to play. Dylan Gabriel played there his freshman year too. And that was his second road start. It's actually kind of a similar situation. All things considered, a little bit different for, because, you know, nothing's exactly parallel, but, that UCF team had several trips down to the red zone, and Gabriel threw a couple really bad interceptions into that 3-3-5 defense they were running in the red zone. Once it got kind of more compressed down, you know, that's another hypo thing. The red zone offense was so bad. It just, they couldn't figure out how to finish drives if they weren't big play scores. That's so beside the point, but Gabriel really struggled in that environment with, especially like finishing drives, to not make the bad throw and, you know, to deal with that kind of crowd noise. And, you know, he was a freshman at the time. I think if he was healthy this year, it'd be a very different situation, but he's not. And we've got another true freshman going into this game with, you know, and it's going to be very difficult. The crowd's going to be electric. You know, beating UCF means a lot to Cincinnati the same way beating Cincinnati means a lot to UCF right now.
Yeah.
You know, these two teams think of themselves as the top two in the conference, you know, this year it's probably Cincinnati, SMU, their top two, but like they think of themselves as the top two programs in the conference. It's a big deal. They're both going to the Big 12. I think they're both very aware that they both think very highly of themselves in that regard. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So it's going to be a crazy, crazy crowd.
So ABC who game. Are you picking?
Cincinnati. I'm picking Cincinnati.
Yeah. Same. All right, so the only place we differ is in that Memphis Navy game, so we'll have to be watching that Thursday night.
Mm-hmm. Always. I don't know what the NFL game is this week, but always the Thursday night college game.
100%.
You know, and my beloved Red Sox just beat up on the Rays. So, you know, take that, Eric.
Yeah. I didn't even know, is Eric a baseball fan? Like,
is he just a Tampa fan?
Is he like casual or is he like an actual fan?
He's an actual Tampa fan.
Okay. I didn't know that there was life outside of football like that. So it's good.
Yes, it is good. He's got his Tampa Bay Rays and now they've been eliminated in four games. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, got to see if we're getting the White Sox or the Astros.
Oh.
But yeah, won't have to deal with the trip down back to Tampa. So that's nice.
Yes.
Absolutely. We've got awards to do though.
Yes, we do.
Would you like to go first or would you like me to go first?
Why don't you start us off with like a good, a solid football one, and then I'll jump in with some.
All right.
We can go back and forth. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've kind of heard Emily introduce that there. I'm going to do more of your kind of traditional midseason awards. She's got some really, I think, more interesting ones to talk about though. But,
I don't know about that, but it's going to be a fun mix.
I think so. Yeah. It'll be good. Yeah. I'm going to start with a surprise team for everyone on the year. And it's a surprise kind of in a negative way, Tulane.
Oh, no.
I don't think anyone expected them to be 1-5, 0-2 in conference in midway point. You know, did you?
Not.
No,
you're going to 100% not.
You know, 100% like, not. And there's factors that go into it. The hurricane displacement did not help them at all, trying to get off to a normal start. But this is a team, you know, Michael Preckinvir is very highly anticipated to see what type of growth and development would happen. Yes. As we've talked about, the turnovers are still happening probably too much. He's a little too streaky in that regard, where he's hot, really hot and incredible for stretches. And then he'll go a couple drives in a row where you're like, what are you looking at? You know?
Yeah.
And because of that, as well as the defense, as I mentioned on our review show the other day, just kind of falling apart in a way that they really shouldn't have this year. Is that defense should not be one of the worst in the country, but they are statistically now. Those are things that I think have surprised everyone. And because of that, I've got them down there as a surprise team in this very unfortunate way. A small chance to turn it around if you're looking at everything going forward. You know, they're in conference play now. You know, they can have a good run in conference play, but, you know, they need this bye week.
Yeah, they really do. They do in a big way. That bums. I mean, I get why you have to give it to them, but that bums me out to no end.
Well, I was thinking about this. You can go kind of like surprise in one of two ways, where mm-hmm. it's like surprise good or surprise bad. And I don't like giving it to Tulane as a surprise bad because I really like Tulane. Like, I like what the program's become. I like how they've developed themselves. I like Willie Fritz. I like all the effort they put in. You know, I like their fans a lot. You know, I mean, like the interactions I've had with their fans, you know, whether it's in person or on Twitter, have always been super positive. I just, you know, 1-5 is 1-5. You weren't supposed to be there.
Yeah, you know, they really aren't.
You know, this was a year that they thought they could take a step forward.
Yeah, I really thought it was. But we do have to remember, I think something that I keep forgetting myself is that this is Chip Long's first year. So maybe he just needs to figure it out too, you know?
It is. There is like a kind of get comfortable with one another process that he and Pratt need to do, and the rest of the offense as well. We often talk about things in a very quarterback-centric way. Just it's how we talk about football. I think everyone does. But like, it's not just Pratt who needs to do it. The offensive line needs to block a lot better than they have been.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not smart enough to talk about intricates of like the intricacies of blocking schemes. I'm just not. I know like a little bit about them, but like if I'm watching a game, I'm not like, ah, beautiful pin and pull method there. You know what I mean? I'm not, it's not what's going through my head. You know what I mean? But there are different blocking schemes that line could be, you know, I'd have to like actually do a deep dive where they're just not used to what they're being asked to do yet. You know, things like that happen all the time. That could be, again, part of it's all, you know, everything. It's all not clicking right now, though.
It's definitely not clicking at the moment, but hopefully, you know, they'll take this time to regroup and figure it out. And
I hope so, too, because I, again, like Tulane, would love a turnaround.
Yeah, I would as well. Okay, so for my first award, I am going to do something a little different. I'm going to talk about uniforms. And we already talked about the worst ones in the last podcast, because I don't really think that there has been worse American uniforms than the thing Memphis Tulsa game.
I hate to cut you off, but the part of it was they were both bad. So like if they clashed, they didn't go together. Oh, like you can have a bad uniform been one and the other team's like fine.
Yeah.
You forget about it. You don't think that they were both bad.
No, but they were. So that we already talked about that. So we don't really need to touch on anymore. So I was going to do best uniforms. And this one for me is kind of a toss up because it's one that we've already seen, which is, in my opinion, those Tulane helmets from the Ole Miss game, which game aside, obviously, didn't help at all. Well, No, not at all. It didn't help. So, but they were incredibly cool throwback helmets that they had from their nod to the SEC days for Tulane. So those, in my opinion, were like some of the best uniform things that we've seen. Now, that being said, I think the best uniforms yet to come. Today, we just received an email from UCF, and I'm sure you saw this, but I just tweeted out piece by piece the space game uniforms. And every year we look forward to these because they're always really cool. And it's such a nod to something neat. So if you want to check that out, definitely go on my Twitter. I did a deep breakdown of what the uniforms look like because I wanted to give everybody like an idea of overall. So they're honoring the 40th anniversary of the shuttle program, which is so cool. And I basically broke it down by what's on each thing. So for example, like the numbers 0 through 9, they list all 135 missions of the space shuttle program. They're written out across the 0 through 9 digits, which is so cool. They have specific patches. They have the stripe down the pants that is supposed to show the rectangular pattern of the wings of the shuttle. It's like an outline of that. Mm-hmm. So anyways, if you want to see all of that, just go to Twitter or go to the UCF website. They have it too. But some of the coolest ones that I've seen from Space Day, don't you think?
I was actually going to ask you, where do you think they ranked? Because 2018s are still my favorite. The ones they wore against Temple in 2018. I really like
those. Were those the constellation, the black ones?
Yeah, the all black constellation with the Canaveral blues like stripes. I really like those still.
That was cool. I mean, aesthetically, those are the cool ones, but I like this one. They're not like anything cool to look at because they're just white and black and they have a little bit of the blue. But I think the meaning behind each thing is so interesting. It
definitely is. I bet somewhere on there, there's the Bull Slayer constellation because they like to include that on the space game uniforms.
I
haven't like looked close. I saw them. I glanced at them earlier today. I didn't take the time to like really look at them just because I didn't have the time to break down the uniforms.
I know that's kind of what I did right before we started as I was like doing this, but I was like, oh, it pertains to what I'm doing. So it's great. Yeah. I mean, they have patches on the arms.
And also I'd say like, I know UCF fans can be too much about the space stuff sometimes, like when Mississippi State and Purdue did space uniforms, like you're stealing our thing. And I didn't like that because who cares? It's a uniform. But I would also encourage people who don't know why UCF does space uniforms to look up the university's connection to like to NASA and to the U.S. space program, which are very deeply linked. Like 25% of the people who work at Cape Canaveral's NASA center there are for UCF graduates. It's a space grant university. That's a very important like school as far as space research goes and things like that. And the 50-yard line's actually lined up with the launch pad at Cape Canaveral. And so when they do launches, you can like see it perfectly lined up. And it's very cool. If you've seen any of the photos from those, like the SpaceX launches that have gone off recently.
Yeah. I mean, they tweet them all the time.
Anytime they happen, they tweet them out. Yeah. So like if you follow UCF's Twitter account, you'll see them eventually.
I thought the other neat thing was the helmet stripe. They have this clear kind of helmet stripe over the white helmet with names of over 100 UCF alumni, faculty, and fans who worked on the space shuttle program. And you can see all of the names and the year they graduated, which is, it's just such a cool homage to it and an honor. So, you know, I think it's neat. I'm excited to see them. They're going to wear those on the October 22nd game against Memphis, I believe is when.
And I'll be honest. Before we get off this uniforms topic with this, I did not like the light side and dark side of the moon helmets from a few years ago.
Yeah.
I thought those were like, they gave me like a headache to look at, to be honest. That was a cool idea, but they were like a lot to look at during the
game. These ones are much more clean. I like these. These are going to be fun. I like that you can see the writing on the black numbers, but it's not overwhelming. I think everything is really well done and like tasteful and clean. So it'll be cool. Now we just don't want Memphis to like screw it up and wear something crazy. So,
I mean, Memphis, like I mentioned, they've got very good uniforms when they want to.
Yeah.
They've got good colors that can pop and like work together. Just, I hate when they wear like the gray and black colors. It's weird.
Yes. It's weird.
All right.
What's your next award?
I'm going to go Coach of the Year.
Ooh. Okay.
And I'm going to go Dana. Dana Holgorsen of Houston.
Okay.
5-1 start for Dana. Here's what I'll say. His first 2 years were pretty much disasters. But they were both disasters that kind of had an excuse attached to them. You know what I mean? Like the first year was the year where after week four, King basically was like, I'm out. I'm not liking this. And he convinced him, like, what if you redshirted instead of transferring right away? And then like, he got a bunch of guys to redshirt to like build up next year. And then King still transferred and went to Miami and everything that's going on there now with him. But the team was not good after that because of course they weren't good. They just, you know, basically had their like several of their best players sit for the rest of the year. That's a weird thing to do because it's going to, you know, there's no tanking in college football. There just isn't. You know, there's nothing better. There's no good draft pick that you're going to get. And then, you know, year two is the pandemic, a ton of cancellations for Houston, but they still weren't really winning. And, you know, he came into this year on the hot seat. The Texas Tech game was a disaster because, you know, a different coach on the hot seat completely like flipped the script at halftime and made him look like he didn't know how to adjust. And since then, Houston has absolutely dominated their games. Their offense is efficient and putting up tons of points. Their defense is full of great athletes who are learning how to make plays as a unit. And I think over the course of just this year, but especially over the course of the 3 years, you've seen what's led to this. And even this season, the growth that's going on there at Houston. And I think that's really cool to see. And I do think that deserves recognition at the halfway point, at least. I also thought about Mike Houston from ECU here.
Yeah, he's runner up, right?
He was, yeah, he's the other guy I gave a lot of thought to. Like, I mean, that, and I, like Luke Fickle, Sonny Dykes, I know your team's undefeated, but kind of expected it. You guys were there last year in that way too. But yeah, Mike Houston also, I gave a lot of thought to just because he's been doing a really great job building that program there. And like we were talking about USF a little bit ago, you know, give him the time because the foundation's being built really well at ECU. You just don't rush the process, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I like that.
Dana.
Well, I'm a little surprised, but that I see where you're coming from. So
it's a big picture, Dana, is what I went with.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. They have a lot. We'll see. We'll see how it shakes out. I like that one. Okay. For my second one, I'm going to do best, I don't know how to phrase this, but like best, like charity or, issue like that's being addressed by a school, during a game using their platform. And this one goes to Tulsa for, last week they were supporting mental health awareness because it was part of the student athlete advisory committee's Powerful Minds campaign, and powerful is spelled with six. And this was across all platforms and all sports, but the football team wore the green ribbon on the helmets, helmet stickers, and student athletes had green ribbon pins. And as well as the coaching staff had the green ribbon pins. So that was when they were at Houston. And so it's in the midst of Mental Health Awareness Week, which was October 1st to the 7th. And they were just kind of raising those issues and trying to end the stigma related to seeking help and promoting success through a powerful and healthy mind. So green is that color. It was great to see that. They tweeted out in the beginning of the week. It was awesome. They tweeted this picture, and it was actually in my conference preview article, but they have something called the Bayless Plaza there. And all the student athletes wrote messages. Well, not all, but a lot of them wrote messages around in chalk on the plaza for the Powerful Minds campaign. So they wrote quotes and empowering sayings to end the stigma around mental health. So,
okay. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, we love to see that.
That's a really good one. That's just for the first half too. So, you know, be interesting to see what we all come up with for the second half.
It'll have to.
Yeah, exactly. We'll see what a lot of different opportunities in the second half.
Lot of causes and the football teams in the athletic and across the country are so great about supporting them. I mean, it was hard to give this award because there's been some great things, first responders and, you know, COVID relief support and all kinds of donations and different things being done. So, but this one to me just feels important because it is such a stigma and we're seeing so much of it come out in sports, especially lately. I mean, I don't know if you watched Ted Lasso, but that's being addressed. Yeah, it's being addressed on that national like platform. Everybody watches that. And so to see them address anxiety and, you know, that kind of depression, that kind of stuff in such an open way with coaches and players, like that was so great to see. So we love to see it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. All right. I'm going to go with next up for me is breakout player. And I know this one was actually really tough for me to come up with one on, because I'm going to tell you right now, it's a quarterback, and I didn't want to be a quarterback because I hate going quarterback on this kind of thing.
Right.
Because it feels
like
lazy.
Easy.
It feels like, I don't want to say lazy, but like, you know what I mean? Like, I love if I can find a defensive end or something like that to call my breakout player, because, you know, or, you know, someone who doesn't get the credit that they're due. But at the same time, I think Sethan again at Memphis is really broken out in a big way. Even if Memphis, like we've talked about, struggling lately, he, as a freshman, you just read off that stat a little bit ago about how much, he's averaging best, yards per game in the conference. I think you said
323 yards per game.
Yeah. He's at like 60.5% completion percentage, 1,938 yards, 14 TDs to only 3 interceptions. He's doing a great job at Memphis, making sure that that ball goes downfield. You know, he's done a lot. About a month ago or so, and it feels like now, it was after the UTSA, I was a little bit critical that he wasn't spreading the ball around enough. It was just like basically Dykes and Austin who were getting the ball. The last few games, it's been very different. He's been spreading around a lot more. He lifted the knee. That's all that means.
Exactly. He heard the podcast.
Exactly. Thank you to Seth Hennigan, podcast listener.
Yes.
No, you know, and he's just, I think if they didn't have him, they'd be in a world of hurt, because the running game is not working the way it should at Memphis, or at least the way it historically has. The defense is not any, you know, I'm not going to try to ride the defense here, but like, they're not, they're fine. Like, you know, they've got their issues. We talked about that already. We talk about it enough. We like Mike McIntyre, so we're not going to be like piling on for anything here. You know what I mean? But there's issues, you know, there's growth that can be, that can occur. And I think without him, you know, you're looking at probably losing, you know, maybe to Mississippi State, though a lot of the points against Mississippi State were off special teams in the defensive scoop and score. You know, I think they'd be in a worse place without him by far. And Grant Gunnell was supposed to be the guy all off season, is what we heard, the Arizona transfer. And you know, he got injured, unfortunately. And I don't think anyone's even whispered like, well, you know, what about Grant Gunnell? If he's healthy, shouldn't he play? No one's even considered it. I think it's because of how well Hennigan's been doing it. And as a freshman, you know, you don't have to be a freshman to be a breakout player, but it makes it harder to succeed the way he has, certainly.
I like that. I love giving young guys their due, because it is not easy to just walk in and lead a team as like an 18-year-old, 19-year-old kid, you know?
Absolutely. Like I just talked about Mikey King going into Nipper Stadium, you know, for our preview of that game. And I don't think that he should be allowed to like throw the ball more than 10 yards downfield against Cincinnati. I think that would be a mistake to like, unless you have to. Don't like force downfield quick screens to athletes, quick slants to athletes, you know, and hand the ball off. You know what I mean? That might be predictable, but I don't want you to put them in a position to like have to do too much. Seth Hennigan, I don't know I'd have that concern about. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that maybe that's just because I've seen him do it already, whereas Keane's had a lot less time out there. You know what I mean? If Keane had his first game against, you know, Florida A&M or Bethune-Cookman instead of against, you know, conference opponents, I think maybe you feel differently. But the truth is, when we see freshmen play, I expect it to look a lot more intimidated than you ever see with Hennigan.
Yeah, he does look more at ease than most guys.
Very decisive.
His age. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's probably a credit to his teammates too, you know, making him feel like he can do that. So,
absolutely.
All right. My next award is going to go to, and this is going to be a surprise to nobody, but it's going to go to venue, best venue.
Ooh.
And this is tough because I don't physically think I've ever been. And well, no, that's not fair. I've been to Houston. I've been to Tulane. I've been to UCF, but that's about where it ends. But this is not from my personal opinion. This is from everybody else's and the world's personal opinion. And I'm sure you know where this is going, but it's got to be Nippert Stadium. Yeah, exactly.
The Nip. A lot this show.
The Nip at night. Yeah, I know we have, but you have to address the fact that it is crazy that you can get this kind of, you know, stuff going in Cincinnati. I mean, I had no idea until I joined this podcast that this was even like that big of a thing. I didn't even know the name of the stadium. So,
it's very old and like in the campus itself, it's like built into the ground, I want to say.
Yeah.
Like very unique setup that they've got there.
It's been, I guess, let's see, for almost 90 years, I think. Well, let's see. And it's not, the funny thing about it is that it's not because somebody donated it, how it got its name. Mm-hmm. It's from a player, Jimmy Nippert. Mm-hmm. Which is so cool. And you can read like the whole story about him in the 1920s. And why it's named after him and the tradition. So that's kind of cool because most places are named, you know, for
a big donor or yeah, like exactly. A sponsorship stadium, you know?
Exactly. So it was kind of, it reminded me of Kinnick, you know, mm-hmm. Iowa Stadium is also named after a player, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. So anyways, that I think is cool. And then after seeing it Friday night, when they did the blackout and Nippert at night came back, they had the players wearing sunglasses. I mean, the fans wearing sunglasses, which was really cool. Mm-hmm. You could just see it was an incredible place and it clearly does make a difference. So that's definitely going to be the environment right now. They have made some upgrades to it, by the way. So
yeah,
it's not the same old stadium.
Yeah. Hey, it is an awesome stadium. I did this like,
Have you been?
I've not been to Nippert.
Right, have to go.
Yeah. I mean, I don't go to the Midwest often. I just don't. I've got a buddy who's getting a doctorate at Ohio State right now. And if I end up in Ohio, I'm probably going to end up in Columbus just because of that reason. I don't know if, you know, but we'll see what ends up happening. I can make a full trip of it at some point.
Yeah.
I'm sure. I just need to figure it out. No, I was going to say like this past offseason, I did one of those kind of like offseason articles that is just kind of for the fun debate about it. Like kind of ranked the 11 AAC stadiums, you know, it's obviously my personal opinion. I tried to do it with like some kind of method to my madness of like, well, you get points for atmosphere, you get points for how beautiful it is. So obviously that's a subjective thing. Like how, you know what I mean? Like points for like the tradition that goes with it, blah, blah, blah. I believe I had Nippert at number 2 on that list. I think Dowdy Ficklin ECU stadium is my top stadium in the conference.
Yeah. Well, it's crazy because it's the second oldest stadium in college football, which is
something I didn't expect at Cincinnati.
Yeah. It's insane. And they've just been like making updates. Like they've done the field, they've redone that, they've added the new scoreboard, which is, you know, incredible. And they just keep renovating and making it better and better. It's a lot of money, but they do have like luxury boxes, club seats, new press box. They did a lot of new fan amenities this year, which has been helpful for people getting in and out. So I think the capacity is 40,000 around there. So
it's a little higher. If I'm not,
I don't know. It said that the game on Friday night was 38,000 was the total for how many people were there, which isn't quite 40,000, but it was a sellout apparently. So I don't know. The last,
we'll see. I'm like trying to look up the Wikipedia.
No, I know. I have all these articles. Oh, about.
You're right. It looks like the list, the capacity at 37,798 on Wikipedia, mind you.
There we go. So they said 38.
It looks bigger than that to me though.
It does. It does. Because,
like, you know, I hate to use UCF's bounce house as like a measuring stick, but that's like 45-ish. And I thought that Nippert looked bigger, at least that feels bigger on TV than the bounce house does.
One of the cool things, I'm just going to say this before we move on, is in the stadium, there is a granite marker at the south end of the stadium gate state. So if you go to a game there, go check this out. It's dedicated to the memory of James Gamble Nippert. And it was dedicated by students and his law class, 1924. So you can clearly see that's like a grave headstone type looking structure. So when I go, I'm definitely going to find that, but just kind of cool things like that, that make stadiums neat. So I'm definitely, I'm sold. I want to go to Nippert. So
absolutely.
Very cool.
All right. My next one, I'm going to go with the big one here.
Okay.
MVP. First half MVP.
Oh boy. Okay.
First half MVP. Tanner Mordecai, the SMU quarterback. Again,
fair.
Your gut says No, don't choose a quarterback. That's easy. It's simple. But Tanner Mordecai has been awesome for SMU.
Yes.
So far this year, you know, he's at a 72% clip right now for his completion percentage, 1893 yards, 26 touchdowns to 7 INTs. Just absolutely explosive. But mm-hmm. It's explosive. That 72% completion percentage is really, really good. That's the type of completion percentage that, you know, would qualify as, you know, elite status. So he's completely explosive while also not, you know, missing targets all that frequently. He does trust his arm too much, I think, and leads to interceptions. I saw Sonny Dykes say something the other day where he was basically like, I only blame one of his interceptions this year on Mordecai himself. Like, a lot of tip balls, a lot of things like that of like interceptions. And I agree and I don't agree. He's backing his quarterback there. Like, there's still times when he might have gotten tipped up, but you shouldn't have thrown that ball into traffic also. You know what I mean?
Right.
Or like, if it's tipped at the line of scrimmage, well, it is on the quarterback to get the ball up over the line of scrimmage and, you know, not get it batted down or tipped, you know.
Right.
You know, but don't get me wrong, every interception has its own story and not everyone should be blamed on the quarterback. But no, Mordecai's been awesome leading that SMU offense. I mean, that Hail Mary against La Tech sticks in my head. I don't know about you.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So he's done, I think, just an incredible job. I don't think there's a ton of debate about, you know, who the best offensive player in the conference has been. If you're, you know, and I think that he probably translates to the best player overall in the conference right now.
I can see that. I understand it. He has one of the best names too.
It's great. No it complaints great. Here about Tanner Mordecai.
Never. All right. Well, I have one last category and it's kind of like your MVP category, except it's for the real MVPs, which are the special teams guys.
Okay.
And I like to give them a shout out. So this is my real MVP category. And I'm going to start with, there's three guys. The first one is the punter, Ryan Wright for Tulane. He has to be given all of the credit in the world for how many times he has to punt when Michael Pratt fails to convert on third and fourth down.
So mean. There's no need.
It's not mean. It's true. And he literally is amazing. He's leading the conference in punting, averaging 47.4 punting yards a game. And he had a long of 68 yard long punt. He's got 12 in the 50 plus category. Yeah. So he's got 1,186 punting yards, which I don't know how many passing yards that Michael Pratt has, but it might be more than that. I would have to go look. It's not, but it's close.
I kind of think it might be.
I know. I was thinking that too. And then I looked and I was like, so Pratt's got 1,364 passing yards and the punter has 1,186 passing yards. Who is going to have more yards by the end of the game? That's the big question by the end of the year. So we'll have to keep an eye on that.
I think that it is Pratt at the end of the day.
Okay. Well, we don't know that. So shout out Ryan Wright, Tulane punter. You're amazing. The next guy is going to be a kicker and it is the ECU kicker, Owen Daffer. I really wanted to give it to my buddy Blake Maz at SMU because I love him. He's incredible. Came from Washington State and I'm so excited to get to watch him. And then I was like, I want to give it to Rory Bell from Temple for hitting that, you know, career 55 yarder. But at the end of the day, the ECU kicker, Owen Daffer, he's made 8 of 10, not the highest percentage rate, but he made a 39 yarder and he averages about 1.3 made field goals per game. So kicking is important. Obviously Mike Houston values that. And Gus Malzahn could take a few notes. Gus Malzahn,
if you look at his Auburn team's values kicking, he inherited a bad situation.
Well, he needs to figure it out. So that's my advice. Call up Houston. And then my last one in this category, if you haven't seen this kick return, you should. Trey Tucker from Cincinnati ran one back 99 yards kickoff return versus Indiana. If you haven't seen it, Google it. It's incredible. And he now leads the conference, or he has led the conference in kick returns with 7 for a total of 231 yards and that one touchdown, averaging 33 yards per kick return. So
fair enough.
There we go.
All right. Now, do you want me to tell you which kicker you missed and should have talked about more?
No.
Brendan Hall on SMU. He's 6'8", and I think that needs to be addressed that they've got 6'8" kicker/punter.
That's fair.
I think I'm not talking anything about his quality of play. I've only seen him actually kick a couple of times, and he's been like on kickoff. So like,
he has only kicked twice. He's only kicked two field goals. Right. But he's kicked two field goals. He made none of them. So
I think he's probably the big leg kicker for them, but
he is definitely the punter. I mean, he's got good yardage. They just clearly don't have to do that much, you know? So,
But again,
that's why
6'8" is worth remembering.
Yeah. It is interesting.
It's like that. Who was that punter that Houston had who was like, he was like 6'10" a couple of years ago, and he was tatted up and down the arms. Australian guy. It was incredible. He was also like 30 years old too.
Well, that's my favorite punter is Miami's punter, Lou Hartley, because he's incredible. So,
yeah.
But yeah, just got to give special teams their love.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Did you have any other categories for us?
No, that was it. Do you have one more? Or are you done?
So I didn't know if I wanted to do MVP or offensive player of the year and defensive player of the year. So I know who I'd say for that. I just wanted to know whether or not I should pull it out or not.
If you want, yeah, go for it and end it off with that.
If I had to give a defensive player of the year right now, it's Marcus Jones, the corner from Houston. I
love that.
Awesome athlete, awesome player. He's been locked down. Also could be your special teams player of the year if he felt like it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he's awesome. When you're watching Houston, look out for number 8 on defense.
He's the punt return specialist for sure. And then Trey Tucker is more of the kick return. Yeah. So yes, Marcus Jones is awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Yeah. And that's, I think, everything that I've got for our little season award show. Do you have, I just asked you that. So
no, but congrats to all the guys that, and all of the places and things and people that we honored.
Are lost. Yeah. Trophies are lost in the mail.
we'll get them there eventually. We'll see.
All right.
That's going to do it for this one, huh?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's about time. You can find me at Dan_Morrison96 and
you can find me at MLM, EMILNEM.
All right. And we're all set.
We'll see you next time.